Tokyo Raven Saunders had a good day at the office in the women's shot put, becoming only the third American woman to medal in the event with a second place finish. Hours later at the victory ceremony after receiving that medal and letting the national anthem of China play for gold medalist Gong Li Zhao, Saunders remained on the podium, crossing her arms over her head for more than 20 seconds. Afterwards, she spoke about the moment to our Lewis Johnson.
You also crossed your hands over your head. Were you making a statement there?
Yes, sir. X is the cross-section, the intersection of where all people who are oppressed meet. For me, I represent so many wonderful communities who are constantly being held down all around the world, and I just wanted to stand up for them, let them know that there's somebody who represents them, looks like them, who understands the things that they're going through, who's willing to use their platform to speak up.
It's the world's biggest sporting stage, one that transcends any spoken or written language. Where national uniforms erase sponsors' placement and distinctive colorways.
And this Olympics was one for the history books because of who competed. A record number of LGBTQ plus Olympians from around the world.
Despite, or perhaps because of, that uniformity, small gestures and equipment choices are speaking volumes about the athletes who populate the result sheet.
Any young LGBT person out there can see that no matter how alone you feel right now, you are not alone and that you can achieve anything.
Today on the podium, showing a little, telling a lot. From NBC Sports, this is The Podium, a podcast about the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympic Games. I'm your host, Lauren Shahadi, coming to you every day from the ground with a unique angle on the performances that are carving what's possible on ice and snow.
Everybody has a choice in what their helmet looks like. For Sam Meyer of Austria, it's just the matte black. But on Jane Channel's helmet, she displays a number 7 and some wings. She was witness to a tragic incident where her former boyfriend drowned. He had a heart condition, unbeknownst to her, and passed away. He was a footballer. His football number was number 7. She carries the 7 and the wings on her helmet as a dedication to him.
My helmet is snake heads, so it goes with that theme of my snakeskin race suit. And then I actually had a snakeskin pod for a long time on my first sled. So it was one of those lean in and lean in hard kind of moments.
Skeleton requires a big lean in, a face first, full speed commitment to competition. Crossing the finish line first are the custom painted helmets of the competitors. And considering the colorful personalities that this sliding sport requires, it's no surprise that the designs aren't exactly sliding by unnoticed.
Andrew Blaser of Team USA is preparing for his first official Olympic Winter Games run.
My name is Andrew Blaser. I am a 2022 Olympian competing for Team USA in the sport of skeleton.
Andrew, thanks so much for being here. Let's start at the top with the skeleton helmets. They're always going to be the center of attention, right? Because they lead the action. But it's the paint jobs. They're just so unique. What are some of the designs?
There's a couple that are really cool. I have seen a lot of pictures with my teammate, Katie Ulander. She has the big eagle on it, which I love because that's very much Katie. I think Nicole Silveira from Brazil has a really cool one with the stethoscope and thing. She's an RN, is her big kid job, we would say. Kelly Delkas is really cool and always has been. She used to have a giant unicorn and these really cool designs. I think it's one of those things that we all kind of have a little piece of it that we put into it.
I love it. So what's your piece? Andrew Blaser style, if you will.
I kind of have a loud personality in general. Between all of the sports that I've participated in, I kind of like to make a little bit of a loud statement, just depending on where we are, whether that's a super avant-garde mustache. My first year competing on the North America's Cup circuit, there were four guys and we all shaved our mustache to a different kind of big, loud way. I compete in a snakeskin speed suit most of the time, and it's gray, but the pattern on it is very different compared to what a lot of people are sliding in. I had a helmet that was half the Declaration of Independence and half of it was little skulls that were American flags. And I just think that it should be fun and it should be a representation of you and your personality while you're competing. I don't think that those things should go by the wayside just because you're in a sporting environment that a lot of people take very seriously. And I think that you can have fun and still be very serious. The helmet, mine is actually not painted. A lot of people go through and they have it airbrushed by different artists. Mine was done by a guy in Hooper, Utah, outside of Ogden. That's Intermountain Hydrographics. And it's hydro-dipped is what they call it. So it's a little cheaper on it. And he already had a pattern that looked good. It's also, I believe, a little lighter, which doesn't really matter when you're looking at that. But sometimes we do get really concerned about our weight and ounces matter. So it's hydro-dipped and he did an awesome job with it. I've had it for a couple of years now. I think 3 or 4 years. And the front of mine is kind of scraped off from Whistler and La Plaine and those higher pressure tracks where my face is actually dragging. And we get kind of a patch that's missing on our chin. And a lot of people will go through and replace that. And for me, those are kind of like the battle scars for my helmet. And that helmet has saved my life a couple of times. And it will always have like a little special place in my heart just because I've gone through so much with that helmet. So I left it with the games. I could have had one painted or done with a different story, but that was me. And that was something that I could keep that felt very kind of authentic with my journey to get here. And the last several years of becoming an Olympian, it's not an overnight thing. It's a very long process for most of us. So I wanted to keep that just as a reminder of everything that I've gone through to get to this point.
Yeah, of the past. I think that's so interesting to have that athlete behind the visor, that journey to get into the helmet actually manifest onto it. And for you, a part of that journey is being one of the record number, but still few openly LGBTQ athletes at these games. What does that add to your experience here in Beijing?
It's a little interesting because I think in this experience, everyone that I've really spent time with here has known me for several years. It's not like it was this big, awe-inspiring moment for the people that I compete with. I'm trying to think of kind of how to phrase it, where it means a lot to me just because I think it's a non-stereotypical sport. I think it kind of helps break that mold. And there are certain sports and whatnot where you will see a male athlete come out and it's kind of like, well, we expected that. Where I feel like sometimes skeleton, it has kind of this fear factor to it. It has this macho persona almost. And that shouldn't have any bearing on your athleticism or your ability to compete. So I think that if I'm saying this correctly and what I kind of feel about it, it's cool because it enhances the experience and might bring a little bit more visibility to someone else that they also are able to compete and compete at a very high level. And that sexuality has no real bearing on whether or not you're able to do those things. It doesn't change my athleticism in any capacity. I'm not more athletic because of it. I'm not less athletic because of it. I am just an athlete who is gay.
That's so well said. That part of your identity also represented when we see you pushing off the block.
Yeah, that one has kind of a fun story. My teammates with my saddle being the rainbow tape, my teammates in Whistler at the beginning of the season went down to a sporting goods store to buy some equipment that we hadn't brought with us to Canada. And it was the first stop. I was taking them down Whistler, which is it's one of those tracks that people are scared of because of the speed. or because of the horror stories. So we've built Whistler into a very big, almost monster is how I define it. And overcoming that fear and sliding in Whistler is kind of one of those jumping off points in the sport. It's a badge of honor kind of things. It's getting better now that more people are exposed to it. But when it was first on tour, it was this fear factor track. And I was up there actually coaching a development camp with the IBSF and exposing some newer sliders to it. So my teammates, there were four of them who hadn't been there before, were also up there. So I was kind of coaching my team. They went down to get this equipment and they came back with a roll of rainbow hockey tape. And they were like, we saw this, we thought of you, we hope you use it, was basically the thing with it. And it just kind of melted my heart a little bit, because it was like, oh, that's so sweet. And they know that this is something that has made me the person that I am. And it's a way for me to express a little bit of that and to provide a little bit more visibility for other up and coming athletes or people who may be struggling with something. And I have always had a Team USA sticker this season on my sled that is a rainbow sticker. And again, we can't have that here at the games, so it came off my sled. But my saddle, I've had that tape on there for a couple of weeks, where it's just another way for me to increase the visibility in this sport. It's been really fun because I've gotten a lot of messages of support from people, just teenagers who were like, I saw this, I thought it was really cool, I love sports, and I've not seen that visibility level on the world stage, so thank you, or things like that. And I think it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, depending on where they are in their athletic journey, in their life journey. And I'm glad that I'm able to provide that in such a simple way.
This is the United States' sole representative, the 32-year-old Andrew Blazer. You see the rainbow tape there on his sled? He is one of just a couple of outwardly gay men to compete in skeleton competition and trying to raise awareness for the LGBTQ community in sport.
Andrew, I read in your bio that you started skeleton as a family joke. I need an explanation on that.
So I got into the sport of skeleton in 2012. I had graduated recently from the University of Idaho, and I had been offered a graduate assistant job at Utah State University. I always thought that I was going to be an Olympian in the decathlon. And then as I got older and further into the sport, I did not have a future in that. I was decent at six events. I couldn't throw to save my life. So my sister and I had grown up with, you know, exposure to the sport of bobsled through the movie Cool Runnings, like everyone does. And where this really evolved from was I was trying to figure out what came next. And we had talked and it was just, well, bobsled. Every track athlete tries bobsled. And it was like a joke, but then it wasn't one day. And I called the coaching staff in Lake Placid. Members of them are still on staff. And I was like, hey, I want to try this. From there, it became okay, how tall are you? Have you taken a combine? And what's your weight? And I told them all these things. And I don't know if it was just kind of an in one ear, out the other. I showed up in Lake Placid after taking my first combine, and they took one look at me and they're like, you are too small. Can you gain 25 pounds before this date in October? And I was like, well, no, this is the heaviest I've ever been. So they encouraged me to try skeleton. I took a skeleton driving school is what we would call it. Like, I went down to Park City and I slid for 5 days down there and then bought a little 10 punch pass to continue sliding some that season. And I absolutely hated skeleton. It was not for me. The school sleds aren't really highly advanced equipment like what we slide on now. And I hit a lot of walls. I had a lot of tears. I yelled at my coach as he let my sled go the first time. Shout out to Lincoln DeWitt. And it became this almost challenge that I walked away from more than I actually participated in. I really honestly did not enjoy it. I came back to next year, slid for, I believe, 3 days a week was my standard, and had the sled that I had purchased set up wrong. So I wasn't actually able to drive it or control it. And it was just a free-for-all, we say, lay and pray kind of moment. So I just would run and lay down and take every hit that happened down the track. A lot of people are big thrill seekers. I'm not. I don't enjoy roller coasters. I don't enjoy feelings of being out of control. I drive a motorcycle. I don't like to accelerate very fast. I like to go usually slightly under the speed limit, like about being in the scene as opposed to being in a car for me. I don't do a lot of thrill seeking activities. So this was very much outside my comfort zone. Whereas other people will get on a sled, and from the moment they get on the sled, it's like, this is it. So eventually I went back in and tried bobsled again, tried to drive, was awful at it. I had zero concept of, you know, the D-rings and steering a sled well. So that lasted, we'll say, a week. And then I was back in the back of a sled for the rest of that season. So I have kind of this weird 3-ish year journey, bobsled skeleton, bobsled. And then I actually moved to Kentucky for an off season and spent some time down there, bought a sled on a whim and drove back to Utah, actually drove to Vancouver, Canada, picked up the sled and then drove to Utah, and then got a good overnight when I was on a sled that was actually set up. So I PR'd by a second and a half on my third run down the track on that sled, which is a pretty big chunk of time. From there, we just kind of never really looked back. I've still had a lot of times where I've wanted to quit the sport and walk away. And I've still had, and by a lot, I mean a lot. It's a joke that I have quit the sport more than anyone. And I joke that I have my post set up to sell my sled on Sliding Sport Marketplace. And sometimes I think people think I'm serious. Most of the time they don't. But it got me to where I am now, and, you know, sitting in the Beijing Olympic Village. The Yangqing Olympic Village, but we're up here in the mountains. And it was a really long process. And that's kind of the summary of 8 years from a family joke through to where I am now. But it all started with just my sister and I joking about what I was going to do with my life after track and field, and then picking up the phone and deciding to try it.
Wow. You talk about, Andrew, the beginning to where you are now. One thing I'd like for you to look back on is inclusivity. You've been in athletics, I mean, most of your life. What's changed, and what was your personal experience?
So I'm not really sure if I've given a lot of thought to how the inclusivity has changed on a vast whole. I can see how it has for me. And my team has always been very inclusive, especially on the skeleton side of stuff. They've been very much, we operate in an individual sport and we are still on a team, but we are all friends. We all support each other. We have some really good discussions about a vast array of topics, and we don't always agree on stuff. But I will say for my sport and my federation, I don't necessarily believe that anyone has specifically sidestepped inclusivity. We had, I believe, 4 members of the LGBT community over the last couple of years that openly identified that way within the Bobsled and Skeleton Federation. But I do think that there is, it kind of goes back with those stereotypes that you won't enjoy these things if you are a member of the LGBT community, which isn't true at all. The outdoor industry, the outdoor experience is meaningful, or should be meaningful, in my opinion, to everyone. And having an increased inclusivity in that allows that involvement and that passion to be fostered in a larger number of people, which is something that's really beautiful.
Speaking of beautiful, we're seeing all these beautiful helmets, and yours has all these battle scars, right? Are you retiring it for your collection after these games? Do you have a next design in mind?
So a lot of that will depend on what we decide to do with my athletics career. And right now I'm in that in between where you get a taste of it and you're like, yeah, I'm going to keep going. or you're in the in-between of I've done everything that I wanted to do and more. I have a timeline. I've given myself a date of when I will decide what happens next in my athletics career. Right now, the IBSF rules on our helmets have changed, and I believe next year is the last year that our current helmets are allowed, and then we'll all have to get new helmets. So there are people who have already made that transition. I have not yet, but again, I've been through crashes in my helmet and I probably should replace it, but it just will always have a little piece of my heart.
Sure. Sentimental. When we look back at these cool and expressive skeleton suits, is there something you see that we don't?
I think it's just when you look at the whole style, our race suits are expensive. And I don't think that a lot of people understand the amount of financial burden that the athletes actually take on with our sport. And people sometimes think, especially with the US, that we are receiving funding from a government entity or something like that. We are not. So my race suit was $1,300. And then my helmet, I believe helmets run about $700 plus the paint job, which I think the most I've heard on a paint job was $1,200. So having kind of that ability to express and have some form of self-expression in this sport with whatever you choose that expression to be costs us a lot of money. So I think when you look at it in that context, for people who aren't working 6 months out of the year, if that's where we're choosing to invest the finances that we have saved and that are supporting us, then I think you can really take a step back and look at how important that expression is to us as athletes. A lot of the time, I do feel like athletes are only identified by their athletics, and nobody is able to take a step back and identify them as people first. And I think we're finally getting to a point that the larger organizations and governing bodies are starting to see that. We've, you know, amped up the mental health resources here at the Games. We have a lot more accessibility to mental health resources, but we also are still trying to overcome a deficit where we have felt like we are only athletes. And I think it's very important, especially when I look at, you know, my self-expression through my saddle, through my equipment, through my race suit and helmet and whatnot. Those are things that make me and let me express that I am a human before I am an athlete. But everybody out here at these Olympic Games has been through their own struggles. And I hope that we see that whenever anybody's name is on a start list. My journey is mine, and I can own that. Katie Ulander's journey is Katie's, and she has been through her own set of triumphs and I don't know, valleys or low points. And Kelly Curtis has done the same thing here. Those are just my teammates here. But the alpine skiers have done the same thing. The curling athletes have done the same thing. Every one of us has had a number of sacrifices that probably outweigh the number of triumphs, but we're still here.
Andrew told me he specifically wants to get the message out there that sexual orientation shouldn't have a bearing on athleticism, and he is out here representing. He's a really talented athlete. He was a very successful decathlete at University of Idaho. He can do a backflip on a dime.
So in the end, those ounces that might be added to a helmet in paint, they tell the story of the person underneath and how they gain the strength to hold their heads high all the way to the Olympic stage. Every 4 years, the world's greatest athletes compete for gold. That time is now. The Winter Olympics on NBC and Peacock. 17 days of action, excitement, glory, and history in the making. Don't miss a single epic moment. The Winter Olympics continue tonight on NBC and Peacock. Follow The Podium now on Spotify to get automatic downloads. And tune into the networks of NBC to watch every moment of the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympic Games.